Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sunup. The Daily Sunup podcast is a conversation with the Colorado Sun. See our trust indicators at coloradosun.com/ethics. It's Monday, July 1st. Today, Sun Outdoors reporter Jason Blevins has updates from the skiing industry on the Arapaho Basin sale, skier visits, and what resorts are doing with all that money. Before you begin, do you want to help the world and your wallet? From now until August 30th, when you open a new First Bank checking account, you'll help save bees, conserve water, and plant trees. Open a First Bank checking account today. Learn more by visiting efirstbank.com/green. First Bank. Banking for good. Member FDIC. Certain restrictions and requirements apply. See any First Bank branch for details. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. In late June of 1975, the Colorado Springs Gazette reported the imminent closing of the Cotton Club, a beloved downtown nightclub. Founded by Fannie Mae Duncan, the club had challenged racial divisions for over 25 years. Inspired by Denver's vibrant nightlife, Duncan and her husband opened the Cotton Club in the late 1940s, welcoming all races despite local segregation norms. Police Chief Irvin Bruce initially opposed this, but eventually became a strong supporter. The club featured top musicians like Louis Armstrong and Billie Holiday. Urban renewal led to its closure in 1975, but Duncan's legacy lives on. Before we continue, this summer, go wild for Front Range air quality. Walk, bike, or scoot for short-distance trips to reduce harmful ground-level ozone. Sign up for ozone alerts to know when it matters most. Learn more at simplestepsbetterair.org. Now our feature story.
Thanks for listening today, everybody. I'm David Krause, one of the editors here at The Sun, and I'm always happy to have a Monday session with my friend and incredible outdoors reporter, Jason Blevins. Jason Blevins, how's your week going?
It's going well, David Krause.
Got a big holiday week heading up, so nothing like setting off the summer and kicking it off with a conversation about what you and I both always can talk about for hours on end, the ski industry. JB, you had a couple of really cool updates last week. Let's start out with the big one, kind of a little bit of a shocker, but I know it's been brought up before. The Department of Justice is looking into possible antitrust violations with the sale and purchase of Arapaho Basin going to Alterra Mountain. Jason, give us the roundup on that and kind of a little bit of history on a basin being bought and sold and bought and sold.
Yeah, so Alterra Mountain Club, based there in Denver, 18 resort company, resort operator, in February announced it was going to buy Arapaho Basin. From the Canadian Real Estate Investment Trust that has owned it since 1998. Sort of waiting for some news on that deal. Here we are, July, nothing really shaken loose, and found out last week that the delay is being caused by sort of an investigation by the Department of Justice, which is taking a closer look at the ski area consolidation that has gone down in the past couple of years as Vail Resorts and Alterra Mountain Coast sort of assemble deep stables of resorts that give them very large shares of the country's ski industry, resort industry. So it looks like DOJ has is asking Arapaho Basin, it's asking Alterra Mountain Co. for all this information about visitation, demographics, traffic patterns, economics. They've also sent letters to the National Ski Area Association for that group's annual, you know, sort of surveys and information that's provided to its membership. And it's got kind of an interesting process. I'm not sure the DOJ has looked at consolidation in the ski industry for a while, but they have before. And in 1998, ironically, it was with the acquisition of Arapaho Basin. In 1996, Vail Resorts announced it was going to buy Breckenridge, Keystone, and A Basin from Ralston Purina. Ralston Purina used to have a resort compound, and they own those three ski areas. They were very busy ski areas. DOJ sued Vail Resorts, said you cannot buy all three, sell one. So they sold Arapaho Basin. at Arapahoe Basin went to the Canadian real estate group that eventually became Dream Unlimited. But that was a civil lawsuit that sort of forced Vail Resorts to sell A Basin. The argument from the federal government was that it was lessening competition in the Front Range skier market. And as of now, there are kind of 12 ski areas that are, you know, a couple hours away from Metro Denver and Front Range right there. And eight of those ski areas, A Basin, Beaver Creek, Breck, Copper, Eldora, Keystone Vail, Winter Park, they account easily for more than half of the visits in Colorado. And those are all accessible on the Epic and the Icon Pass. Vail Resorts Epic, Alterra's Icon Pass. So there is reason, you know, we've been kind of watching DOJ look at, you know, some consolidation deals around the country these days. You know, we've been writing about some grocery store business that they're looking into, as well as, you know, maybe peeking at Amazon and things like that. You know, they seem to be taking a look at skiing, which I find pretty interesting because they have forced resorts to not buy, not consolidate in the past, but it's been a bit. But the industry is much different now than it was, and we are largely controlled by two players. It's a duopoly, especially in Colorado. So it'll be interesting to see how this DOJ review ends up. I talked to Alan Hensroth, the longtime boss over there at A Basin, and he seems that once the DOJ review is done, the deal will go through. So hopefully we'll see some action on this. But it's just interesting to see the feds kind of digging around in the consolidation of the ski industry, which has been very strong in the past 4, 5, 6 years.
So let's transition there. Skier number came out recently. You talked to Alan actually about some of the changes next year, or not changes, right, with visitation allowed at A Basin. JB, talk about visitation numbers that you kind of reviewed recently, and also what's going to change or not change at A Basin for people next year, regardless of the sale.
Yeah, exactly. So we reached 14 million in Colorado last for the 23-24 ski season. That is down from the record 14.8 in 22-23, but it is still very strong. We have seen just really vibrant ski traffic since the pandemic. People have been going skiing. And, you know, it's still, I think, is ranked as one of the fifth busiest season in Colorado. So nationally, they're down a little bit from that previous year as well, but still 60 million, a pretty, you know, significant showing and very good. Very good showing for visitation. And what we're going to see at A Basin, Alan Hensroth announced last week, he's kind of waiting for people to kind of see where this pass and the sale might end up. But what's interesting about A Basin is that even though it sold to the Canadian group, it was the first resort that wasn't owned by Vail Resorts to be a part of the Epic Pass. And from 1998 to 2019, there was unlimited access on the Epic Pass to A Basin. And Alan Hensroth, a very, you know, sort of a wise leader out there at A Basin, he's very, he has a very loyal fan base and he's very responsive to them. He left the Epic Pass. We're few resorts to leave the Epic Pass. And he went to the Icon. And the Icon had 5 or 7 day access, not unlimited access. And Alan told us last week that A Basin skiers, that will remain. There will only be 5 and 7 day access on the Icon Pass at A Basin next year. Of course, you can buy a full Arapahoe Basin pass, which you're seeing a lot of resorts do, offering their own passes. You know, I think we saw Aspen release some prices of almost $3,000 for an Aspen Snowmass pass. Jackson, Deer Valley also have something close to $3,000 for an unlimited pass for there. But they control access on these Icon passes, which is, I think, a trend we're going to see. And another trend we're going to see for sure is paid parking in Arapahoe Basin will be requiring reservations for all cars at $20 a pop next season. So the free-for-all parking up there is over, and I think that is where we're going to see. And I've said this over and over. When you hear mountain towns talking about crowds, they're often talking about cars. And that is sort of the issue that we are seeing, is a lot of people driving up skiing, and where to put their cars has become sort of the linchpin of crowding issues in mountain communities.
Jason, you know, used to be visitor numbers were like a real big gauge on mountain town successes. That's kind of changed with the use of the icon and the epic, because you have one person going repeatedly. Talk about, you know, what is the barometer now for, you know, mountain town quote success, right? Is it stays in town? Is it lodging? Is it restaurants? What are we gauging success by now with our ski seasons?
For the last 10 years or so, I have accumulated sales tax numbers in mountain towns. And I call that a more successful barometer. And we are seeing vibrant spending in ski towns. Vibrant. I track net taxable sales in 18 Colorado mountain towns, small and large, from busy Aspen and Breck to Silverton. So I tracked that, and they reached $5 million last season. And that is way up from the previous season and almost double 5 years ago. So just a significant amount of spending by visitors in mountain towns. And that is really floating a lot of boats. Mountain town tax collections have never been larger. So mountain towns have money, a lot of money, and how they are choosing to spend it right now is really defining the culture of these mountain towns. You're seeing a lot of investment in affordable housing. You're seeing a lot of investment in community assets and maybe not quite as much in tourism-focused assets. So I think with this spending increase and with these, you know, overflowing tax coffers in mountain towns, I think we are at a pivotal moment in sort of gauging the future and, you know, setting the path forward for a lot of these mountain towns. And it's going to be stuff like affordable housing on parking lots. And so where are they going to put the cars? They're going to put them further afield in a probably expensive parking lot where it's going to cost $20, $30, $40 a day to park. I think we hit somewhere north of $60 at Vail Village last season. There's different ways to measure the success of the resort industry, but one thing that we track at the Colorado Sun is the spending, and it's sky high, never been higher.
Jason, I think you said 5 million. Did you mean 5 billion?
I did mean 5 billion. I'm sorry, I misspoke.
No, that's all right. I know our listeners would probably hear that or pick up, but yeah, 5 billion is just insane, and the way you track that, I think. It is a really good indicator, because, you know, living up here, you see the ebbs and flows of some of the small towns and some of the bigger towns. So it is a really interesting gauge to do that. JB, last thing for today, let's talk about, because people are going to be seeing it if they're up hiking at resorts or biking. A lot of that money that's coming in on these season passes that get bought in spring and summer. Jason, that's a lot of revenue that they're having early, right? So you're seeing summers when people put in new lifts and make changes to buildings. Talk about the difference with the investment money that these resorts are doing compared to, what, 10, 20 years ago when we're building condo villages. Now it seems like the money coming from the skiers is going back into the ski mountain a little bit.
Yeah, not just a little bit. This is a massive investment in resort infrastructure. No longer are we seeing ski companies focused on those canyons of condos at the base. They are putting money into mountains. Record investments in lifts, snowmaking, infrastructure, train expansions, on-mountain facilities. Hit an all-time high in 22-23 when U.S. Resorts spent $820 million, and that included 150 new chairlifts. This year, expected investments will likely top $500 million with something 75 or so new chairlifts. This is huge. We're seeing an average of $35 for every time someone goes skiing. The resort puts $35 into the resort infrastructure. this is a paradigm shift. We are seeing just in record investment in the actual ski experience, in the ski product. For a while there in the late 90s, early 2000s, it really looked like skiing was going to go the way of golf, and it was going to become an amenity for real estate sales. And that is no longer the case. Vail Resorts, for example, it takes less than 1% of its profit from real estate sales, is pretty much shedding real estate. It is no longer invested in real estate, and it is all in on selling these passes in the spring and summer so that they have all the cash they need to give us those high-speed chairlifts and fancy lodges and all the things that they need on the mountain. So pretty, I would call the investment one of the more significant ways to measure the health of the resort industry. And if you look at the resort investment lately, you would recognize that the ski resort industry has never been healthier.
Yeah. Hey, I know, like I said at the start, we could talk about this stuff for hours. And I know you're always invited on panels because of your institutional knowledge on this stuff. But I always really appreciate the insight. Love that $35 number per skier visit. That's just, I'm going to be espousing that one this year up on the list for sure. JB, thanks for the time.
When I ski, you know, 70 times a day and bring my brown bag peanut butter and jelly sandwich in my jacket, they're losing money on me. And there's a whole lot of us that they're losing money on. So I like to think about how that $35 is, they're not getting $35 from me.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I know that feeling when you live in that close and you can do that, get your 70, 80, 100-day seasons in, man. It makes it, it's like when you got that golf pass, it makes you go play golf even when you don't want to.
So you use it.
You're going to use it. You got to use it. So you got to do the math to see how many visits it takes to make it worth the one single day, and then you got to get to at least half of that, right? Yeah, exactly. That's my goal every season. Yeah. So, all right, my friend. I'll catch up with you soon. Everybody, I appreciate you sticking with us. If you want to read more about these ski stories in the middle of summertime, go check out coloradosun.com. You can also sign up for Jason's weekly Outsider newsletter. It comes out every Thursday, except for this week. Since it's 4th of July, we're going to take the Outsider off, but we'll still be outside. Always a good reminder, the Sun, we care about accuracy, inclusion, and transparency. We are a part of the Trust Project. You can check that out at coloradosun.com/ethics. Jason Blevins, my friend, have a great holiday week.
Yeah, David Cross.
Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. Xcel Energy wants to collect nearly $2 billion from its customers for a wildfire mitigation plan aimed at preventing future blazes. Among the initiatives in the three-year plan are adding hundreds of weather stations and cameras, adding technology to more precisely target planned outages, replacing outdated equipment, and increasing line inspections by radar drones. The plan, which must be approved by the Colorado Public Utilities Commission, would increase the average residential customer's bill by about $9 a month. Xcel is facing nearly 300 lawsuits over the 2021 Marshall Fire that destroyed almost 1,100 homes and killed two people. Colorado is following about 20 other states in asking the federal government if the state and federal health insurance program, Medicaid, can also cover meals and rent. The outside-the-box idea catching on across the country is a recognition that healthcare happens beyond the doctor's office and that taxpayers might actually save money long-term if people had the means to stay healthy. A new law recently signed by Governor Jared Polis directs the Colorado Department of Healthcare Policy and Financing to explore asking the federal government for permission to cover food and housing. The rising wildfire threat recognizes no boundaries in a time of climate change, so the path to mitigating those risks can seem daunting. But more Colorado homeowners are using databases and mapping tools to find ways to protect their home. In recent years, Colorado experts have taken significant steps toward developing resources to help with wildfire mitigation, both for homeowners and neighborhood associations. In this week's Colorado Sunday feature, Sun reporter Kevin Simpson looks at programs available and how they've helped, but experts say more commitment is needed. For more information on all of these stories, visit our website, coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again next time. Now, a quick message from our team.
I'm Lauren Wynot, Director of Membership at the Colorado Sun. I came to work at the Sun because quality, trustworthy journalism is important. As a reader and listener, I find the Sun to be a breath of fresh air. The journalists tell Colorado stories that keep me informed, entertained, and engaged. If you also trust the Sun for your news, join me as a member at coloradosun.com/join. Your support helps to bring you and other Coloradans the news you deserve. We couldn't do it without you. Thank you.